The U.S. military's headed to Venezuela, but not how you think, and a major attack in Afghanistan. All that's coming up on today's Hot Zone.
This is the Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
Hey folks, on Wednesday morning, five Taliban terrorists stormed the gates of an American aid organization in Afghanistan. With suicide bombs and machine guns, they killed the men who were guarding the gate of the Counterpart International. That's an American aid agency based in Alexandria, Virginia, who's in Afghanistan trying to help improve the lives of the people. Now, Afghan special forces arrived within minutes and were able to rescue over a couple hundred people out of the compound safely before clearing it and killing the remaining terrorists. In all, five people were killed, not including the attackers. The Taliban spokesperson Zabihullah Mujahideen said the group attacked the organization because it was involved in, quote, harmful Western activities inside Afghanistan. And what are these harmful activities, you say? Well, according to their website, Counterpart International engages in the following horrible, horrible crimes against humanity: maternal, newborn, and child health care, nutrition and food security, behavior change communication, HIV/AIDS community treatment and care and support, malaria prevention and treatment, helping people living with disabilities, water sanitation and hygiene, and they counter gender-based violence. Now, looking at that list, it's easy to see that why the Taliban has a problem with these people. I mean, who wants healthy babies or clean water and nutritious food? I mean, I guess this attack makes it easier to understand why Afghanistan has a 6,000-year-old culture, but still hasn't figured out things like toilets or paved roads or light switches or beds. I mean, who wants all those corrupting Western influences anyway? Well, apparently a lot of Afghans do, because judging by the fact that almost 10% of the country has left for someplace else since 2001, in the past 3 years alone, almost 250,000 Afghans have fled to Europe alone, looking for a better life. So I guess there's something to be said for electricity and seated toilets. But the lack of those things doesn't necessarily qualify a person for asylum, you see. In fact, less than 10% of Afghans who have applied for asylum in Europe are being granted their request and allowed to stay, which of course doesn't make them very happy campers. Listen to these Afghan refugees who are sort of stuck in Serbia after being kicked out of Hungary. I actually visited this camp myself.
So we just found a refugee camp that has about 40 or 50 Syrians in it. The police told us not to go here, but I talked to a couple of the refugees across the fence, and these two guys from Aleppo, and I'm going to try to get them to come out of the gate and talk to me. But Dennis, you better get the hidden camera out, because I don't want to get in trouble.
Waiting my number when I cross go Hungary.
Hungary. You can't cross the fence.
No.
That's
nobody
bad.
Can, no.
That's
no.
Bad.
No, very bad.
You have family here?
Yes, I have my wife.
Your wife?
Yeah, she's pregnant.
Oh,
wow.
Oh, wow. When is she going to have her baby?
Daughter.
When?
Before 6 months.
6 more months?
Okay.
Do you have your family?
She has wife also.
Oh, you have wife too?
Yeah.
Is she pregnant?
No. No, not pregnant.
Not yet.
Germany.
Maybe later. When you get to Germany.
Yeah.
And there's 50 people here.
Yeah, both here. Come transit every week, have new people.
And you've been waiting 8 months.
Maybe after 2 months, I'll go to
Syria. I guess you go every day.
They brought like many policemen, many policewomen, many police officers. They came there. My uncle's wife fell down, you know, started crying. My sisters, and after that, my mother passed out. And they took it with my older sister to hospital. You know, my father says, I have waited here 2 years and 3 months, they told us that you need to leave Hungary immediately, right now, or we will deport you back to Afghanistan, and we accept. They give us paper, we write down that we want to go back to Serbia by our agreement, because otherwise they're going to force us back to Afghanistan, and we didn't want that. It was like a jail, actually, it was a jail, you know, and they told us that we're gonna like work on your case, and then we're gonna give you the answer. They just checked the Serbia, and they said Serbia is safe for you, but they didn't check anything else. They just said Serbia is safe. Police officers are really bad. They treat like we are not a human, like an animal. You know, when they got the order from their higher bosses, they do whatever they want to do, you know. They don't care about any human rights. They don't care about anything, you know. They don't care even if my mother is pregnant.
So this is obviously not a long-term solution. I mean, if the Taliban succeeded at driving out a large percentage of their country, essentially making their poorest people someone else's problem, then they win. Not only that, but immigration from Afghanistan has caused a major brain drain, as the wealthiest and most educated have fled as well. So now for my opinion. I think, personally, this latest attack is just one more reason why the United States shouldn't engage in nation building. In 2001, it was determined after 9/11 that Afghanistan was a threat to our country, so we removed the Taliban from power in a matter of weeks. At that point, we should have just pulled our troops out and sent Afghanistan a message that they can rebuild their country any way they want. But listen, we should have told them, if we determine that you're once again a threat to our country, we'll come back and wipe the slate clean once again. We'll be happy to offer advice and even some limited aid if you ask for it. But other than that, we're not going to meddle in your country, and we'll just leave it at that. Now, some would say that'd be a recipe for mass chaos and misery in Afghanistan that would cause a lot of out-migration. But what is $1 billion a week and 2,400 American lives achieved over there? Mass out-migration. So why don't we just save all the blood and treasure? Others say it would give our enemies like Iran and China an opportunity to come in and set up a puppet government. They're probably right about that, but so be it. Our message to Iran and China should be exactly the same. If you threaten us, we will destroy you. Otherwise, hey, let's do business. We can be your best friend or your worst enemy. Your choice. Now, do I think this idea of mine is ever going to happen? Not a chance. If there's one thing I've learned about governments and militaries, they all subscribe to the ideology of self-justification. I mean, nobody wants to work themselves out of their next year's budget, if you know what I mean. So as for the migrant problem, there's this concept called the death of distance that was coined back in the 1990s when I was a stockbroker. It predicted that the rise of the internet and smartphones would make every part of the globe accessible to every other part of the globe in a way that would radically change the world as we know it. And these global mass migrations from poor countries to rich ones is one of the changes that we're seeing. Before the internet, a goat herder in Zabul province, Afghanistan, was content to follow a bunch of goats around for his entire life because he didn't know there was any other option. But when that goat herder in Zabul province got an iPhone, and he can now watch the show Friends on his smartphone, he's going to end up being less content and wishing he had a more modern life. And really, what does he have to lose if he leaves all those goats and just starts walking north? Add in the generous social welfare programs offered by European states, and it's really a no-brainer for that guy. So it's no different on our side of the pond either. A study released this week shows that fully 25% of Guatemalans, that's over 4 million people, plan to move to the United States. And now Guatemala is poor, but it's not Africa poor. There are bad neighborhoods there, sure, but it's not a war zone. Honduras is worse than Guatemala, and Mexico, despite the violence you hear about in the news, is actually fairly safe and stable, as long as you're not part of the drug trade or live in Juarez, Tijuana, or Acapulco. And yet, at least 40 million Mexicans say they'd like to move to the United States. So between Mexico and the rest of Central America, you're probably looking at over 50 million people who are planning to or thinking about coming to the U.S. If you think that won't bankrupt our already struggling Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and all our other entitlement systems, You're sorely mistaken. Now, already, pregnant women are flocking to enter the U.S. illegally in order to have their babies at taxpayer expense in the U.S. This is no small problem. Last year, there were more babies born to illegal immigrant mothers in Los Angeles alone than there were total births in 14 states and the District of Columbia combined. And nearly 70% of illegal immigrant mothers who give birth in the U.S. do so at taxpayer expense. That costs us a whopping $5.3 billion a year, which would be enough to completely fund the border wall in a little over 2 years. Now, folks, this can't continue. We're taking in more migrants than almost every other country on the planet put together. And the cost to the Treasury, when we're already looking at over $22 trillion in debt, is not sustainable. Now, that's not racism. That's not xenophobia. It's simple arithmetic. Okay, one quick note about Venezuela. Vice President Mike Pence made a speech this week encouraging more of the top brass to defect from the Venezuelan military. And he announced that we're going to be sending U.S. military forces to the Colombian coast off of Venezuela, but not offensive forces. We're sending the USNS Comfort.
So I came today to be very clear. The United States of America will continue to exert all diplomatic and economic pressure to bring about a peaceful transition of democracy in Venezuela. But to those who continue to oppress the good people of Venezuela, know this. All options are on the table. Just as the National Assembly has promised to provide amnesty to anyone who has not committed a war crime, so too the United States of America will consider sanctions relief for all those who step forward, stand up for the Constitution, and support the rule of law. Like General Manuel Christopher Figuera, the former chief of the Venezuelan intelligence service, who just last week broke ranks with the Maduro regime and rallied to the support of the Venezuelan Constitution and the National Assembly. In recognition of his recent actions in support of democracy and the rule of law, I am announcing today that the United States of America is removing all sanctions on General Manuel Christopher Figuera effective immediately. And today, I'm announcing that at President Trump's direction, the United States Navy will deploy the USNS Comfort to the Caribbean, Central America, and South America this June. The Comfort will embark on a 5-month humanitarian mission to address the Venezuelan crisis. United States military and medical personnel working alongside their counterparts across the region will be there to provide medical assistance to communities in need and help relieve countries overwhelmed by the influx of the suffering people of Venezuela.
Now, this is good news for the Venezuelans, but it's really kind of a symbolic gesture more than anything, because the U.S. Navy hospital ship can treat at best a couple thousand people, and there are millions inside Venezuela who need help. And also, how are they going to get there? So, I mean, I'll have some more reporting coming up next week on my recent trip to the Colombian border to talk about that, so stick around. Well, that's it for today's show. However, if you're enjoying the podcast, I hope you'll consider supporting us by going to patreon.com/hotzone, then like and share the podcast wherever you listen to it. If you want to watch the podcast, you can do so for free at opslens.com. So have a good weekend. I know I will. I'm Chuck Holton. And this has been The Hot Zone.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Livefire Media. Copyright 2019.